Chair, and we will open work session on House Bill 2743, and I'd like to, as Representative Mannix is coming forward, like to go over the plan of attack today. For those of you who have missed, House Bill 3392 is off the schedule today, and House Bill 2890 is also off the schedule. Our order of events today will be House Bill 2743, H.J.R. 2, then we'll move to House Bill 2658, House Bill 2474, and we'll finish up with House Bill 3469. We've already opened our work session here on House Bill 2743, and Representative Mannix is here. Kara, would you just briefly update us again on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you should have dash two amendments in your file that replace the original bill. So, if they were adopted, they would no longer create a Marion County Legislative Land Commission. They modify the Capital Planning Commission statutes to add disposition of land to their current statutory authority. There's a fiscal impact, which is, I guess I'd say, indeterminate at best. The measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but that referral was based on the original bill and not the amendment.
Representative Mannix, welcome, and if you would tell us a bit about the newest incarnation here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Representative Kevin Mannix from Salem. The Dash 2 amendments present to you an entirely different approach, really, towards what we're trying to deal with here. And it's a traditional approach, which I would say tips its hat to local planning and to local involvement. The Capital Planning Commission was formed in 1948. It is one of our longest standing government commissions, and it reflected a partnership between state government and local government, unique to this area, designed to accommodate the concerns of the community as to the expansion, development, and growth of state government, and also to reflect the needs of the state government in interacting with the community. I had the pleasure of serving as a member of the Capital Planning Commission when I was a Democrat. I served for 8 years as a member of that commission. I now have the pleasure of serving on the Capital Planning Commission as a Republican, having just been appointed by the Speaker as the House representative on that commission. There's always one senator and one representative serving on the Capital Planning Commission. The reason I mention that is that what's happened historically is that the Capital Planning Commission operation has been bipartisan. It includes members from the executive branch who are appointed voting members, as well as members from the legislative branch who are non-voting, as well as local public members. And it serves as a sounding board to deal with issues of concern to the community as well as to state government. What has happened in the last couple of years is that the state has identified up to perhaps 2,000 acres of land which the state may choose to dispose of in the next couple of years. And state agencies have begun a process, somewhat in cooperation with local governments, of evaluating the potential use of that land and the potential sale of that land. There are development interests in this community that are very interested in that land, but there are also conservation interests in this community who are interested in conservation of open space and green space. And in terms of my own bona fides on this, I served as head of a task force which looked at the state penitentiary grounds and adjacent grounds and the state hospital grounds, and over a process of a year and a half working under the Capital Planning Commission, I was proud of the fact that we came out with a proactive plan for the protection of the state operations at those facilities, but also the protection of green space around those facilities. Some of us have a sincere concern that some processes are now starting to develop in the community where some of this land may be sold and that there will not be a sufficient review of the ultimate plans for the disposition of that property. In particular, we're concerned to make sure that the state's concerns are addressed, as well as the concerns of the Legislative Assembly, and also, of course, the concerns of the community. What prompted the legislation in the first place is reading news reports that the facilitators, I'm putting quotes around that word, who were holding community meetings were telling people from the neighborhoods, well, we're sorry, we can't consider that option. We can't consider this option because it's not really within our mandate or mission. And some of those options included protection of property, protection of buffer zones with state facilities, what have you. One option that some people wanted to talk about, for instance, was the state prison farm being maintained as a farm. So I'm saying without casting any judgment about what may happen, it's important to make sure there's a process to protect everybody's interests. The Capital Planning Commission implicitly has the authority to rule over changes in disposition or use of state property. These amendments make it clear that it actually has such authority. The commission voted to support these amendments to this bill, and in fact they've gotten stuff, as a ratification of its authority to serve as a sounding board for the state agencies and the neighborhoods. I found it ironic to hear that a couple of members of the executive branch are saying, well, you don't need this bill. You already have this authority. The Capital Planning Commission has to review all of this. Of course, my rejoinder is, if we don't need it, then why do you have a problem with us making it specific in the statute? The public members of the Capital Planning Commission, as well as the other members of the Capital Planning Commission, debated this, and they voted in favor of this. The legislative members, again, do not have a vote. They simply have a voice, and I was not yet on the commission at the time that they reviewed this. I would encourage the adoption of this bill and to have it sent to the Senate. It will not have to go through Ways and Means. You can rescind the referral based on these amendments. I can represent to you that the Capital Planning Commission, our traditional sounding board, has voted to support this. I note that our local mayor has indicated publicly that he is still opposed to this legislation. I think that is extremely unfortunate and does not reflect the kind of vision that we need in this community, because the Capital Planning Commission served as a device to empower the community in terms of dealing with the government. Remember, the government could go out if it wanted and just do state government, do what it darn well pleases with its facilities by statute, but instead was trying to empower and bring in the community through the establishment of the Capital Planning Commission. So I'm disappointed to hear criticism of trying to make sure that the Capital Planning Commission has even better involvement in this process. I realize my remarks were somewhat lengthy, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to make a very good record about the positive intentions behind this legislation, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear at this work session.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Representative Mannix. When this bill was in front of us before, we were told that this commission, this Capital Planning Commission, would have veto authority over any plans that was brought in front of it. And so this committee was like the committee. If they supported it, it went forward. If they didn't, it did not. Was that an accurate assessment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, not exactly, because ultimately the decision about disposition of state properties is made by the agencies and by the state government. If the Capital Planning Commission objected to the disposition of state property, what would happen is there may be a delay, and that issue might then have to be brought to the Legislative Assembly. But the Legislative Assembly would ultimately make that decision.
Further questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Swain.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and members of the committee. My name for the record is Mike Swain. I'm the mayor of Salem. I'm here to urge this committee to oppose House Bill 2743-2 amendments and all of its previous incarnations. I have to say that listening to Representative Mannix, I had to think back and remember the fact that I happen to serve on the two task forces that have been developed principally to encourage and to ensure the cooperative effort and collaboration between the city and the state government, but not only between the city and the state government, but also the people that live in this community. I'm here on behalf of the City of Salem to urge you not to support this bill, and we're firmly opposed to the Capital Planning Commission being kind of intruded into the already year-long process of planning that my constituents have been involved in. Far from being concerned about the community of Salem being involved in the process, I'm more concerned about the community of Salem feeling as though the rug has been ripped out from under them because of their heavy participation in a year-long planning process that involved not only the hiring of consultants, the presentation of a number of orientation sessions to the community as a whole involving hundreds of people, the development of two task forces involving the stakeholders in all issues with respect to this planning operation, and conducting what they call charrette processes, which are in fact very intensive planning efforts that take like 2 or 3 days in a row, morning and night, to gather the information and reactions of the community to proposals. Right now, we are in the process of synthesizing all of this year-long effort from all of our community members as assisted by the consultants which have been hired. So we have gone quite a ways down the road towards really developing, I think, a model for cooperation between city and state governments, at least here in Salem. At first, my constituents were very skeptical of this process. Too often, all of us, I think, have been on the receiving end of kind of a show-and-sell process of government, whether that be city government or county or state. And I think a lot of people came to the process fearing that that was what they were going to be seeing. But they have found through cooperation and participation in this process that they were listened to. And there are some points and proposals that are not all reconcilable. Be that as it is, that's democracy. But the process has worked in the sense that it has listened to everybody. It has allowed people to interact with each other and their ideas to compete one against the other. And now the synthesis process is one that is developing to ultimately allow the city of Salem to zone this property. And I just close by saying, let's keep in mind, if we can, the process that was, was ingenious in terms of what it suggested for the city of Salem, at least, that emanated from the state Department of Administrative Services. And that was, the state was going to declare the property a surplus. Then it was going to invite the public in, including the city government, but other interests, to discuss what the plan should look like. Then it would invite the city to zone in accordance with this community evolved plan. And then upon the zoning being in place, the state would sell the property in a fashion which would ensure that the community's goals and ideals for this really large pieces of property would ultimately be what we would see exist here in the city of Salem. When you have 1,000 or more acres that are being released to development, that's a tremendous impact on a community of our size, potentially. And we want to do it right, and we think this process has done it right. So let me just say in closing that I believe we have a good process. I think we have a model process. I feel very comfortable about it. My constituents feel very comfortable about it. The vote was 4-2 in the Planning Commission to support that. One of those votes, Mr. Stuckey, a representative of the Salem Planning Commission, I understand, well, he's first of all brand new, new appointee to the Cattle Planning Commission. I understand that he was not, he did not take that back to Planning Commission, and he was asked to vote, and he voted in favor. Had he been representing, I think, the overwhelming weight of the feeling in our community, he would have voted otherwise, and this would have failed on at least a divided vote of 3-3. So with that, let me conclude, and I would invite any questions that you might have of me.
Thank you. Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mayor Swain. Nice to see you again. What happens if House Bill 2743, as the proposed amendment puts forth, if that bill passes, what happens to the year-long planning process? How do you see that changing with this piece of legislation?
Well, Chairman Wilson, Representative Bowman, it seems to me that what this does is call into question the entire process. It certainly does in the minds of the people that participated. Why do we need oversight by the Capital Planning Commission? And they're going to say, well, I suspect they're going to say, well, Mayor Swaim, how could you come out and support this process, saying that we would have this kind of central role, and to find that there's some other organization out there that's going to have a veto power? How can it be that the representatives from the Department of Corrections and the Department of Administrative Services could come and say that this is the process they think would be helpful, ask us to participate in constructing the process, to follow the process, and then at the 11th hour say, no, that's not the process we're going to follow, but we're going to do something else. And so I feel that it would call into question the entire effort, and it could collapse of its own force.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. Mayor Swain, without this bill, what would the process be that you're currently under? Would you at any time go in front of the Capital Planning Commission with your current, and when would that happen, and what would that process be?
Well, we've not waited until the very end to invite the Capital Planning Commission to participate. In fact, Mr. Myers, the president of the Capital Planning Commission, or chair, I'm not sure what his title happens to be, has appeared before the task forces to explain what they saw as the process, and he's been invited to continue to participate. And to the extent that there is this input from the Capital Planning Commission, we would certainly be amenable to and bound by going through it. It seems to me that the proposal of 2743 is something somewhat different than the present statutory advisory position. Again, we're not dealing with property on the mall. We're dealing with property out in the southeast part of the town here. So I think our process would be, if this didn't pass, that we would, in fact, continue to coordinate with the Planning Capital Commission, Capital Planning Commission, rather, and with the other state agencies in coming to fruition of this community-based plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a little confused. The bill just adds disposition of property to the existing statute. So are you against adding disposition, or are you against the whole idea of the Capital Planning Commission?
Representative Wilson and Representative Harper, no, I'm not against the existence of the Capital Planning Commission. I think it's a good idea.
So you're against the disposition?
I'm against, yes. What does that say? That they shall coordinate the disposition of real property and that other reductions of and changes to the buildings and grounds. It essentially suggests to me that the Capital Planning Commission would have a strong voice in saying no. In saying no to this effort that has been mounted by this community, rather than giving its input. It already has the ability to coordinate with state departments. Capital Planning Commission does. So you have to assume, at least I'm an attorney, so one of the things I teach in law school is that all the language used in legislation is supposed to have some meaning. And so you're supposed to define what is the meaning of the legislation, not considered to be mere surplusage. And when it says and disposition, that must be something that they don't have at this point in time. They feel they should have, and that is to essentially act upon the effort to dispose of the state property. That does have an effect upon certainly the state agencies that own the property, Department of Corrections and Mental Health in one instance, Department of General Services, who coordinates that process. It also has a very direct effect on the planning process that our community has been involved in. So I think it has meaning. I think it has a meaning which is not necessary and perhaps inappropriate, and would be seen by my voters as being inappropriate at this late date on these two particular projects.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Appreciate your testimony.
Representative Mannix, would you come back up for a short minute here?
I'd like to ask you your response to how these two processes would mesh.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The process that has occurred to date is a worthwhile process. There's been a lot of community input, and the Capital Planning Commission does not go out and serve as a substitute for community input. But the community input in cooperation with specific agencies as to specific properties has to be put in the context of what I'll call a master plan for the greater community involving state government and local government. I might add that the Capital Planning Commission will also be sensitive to hearing from the people in the county, not just the people in the city, as to these issues as to disposition of land, because this has an impact on the county too. It's not just a city government issue. The Capital Planning Commission can hear from all those parties and review it. And in my service on the Capital Planning Commission, we aren't the architects, we aren't the people who draw up the plans. We are the people who review, sometimes comment on, and ask for further input. And sometimes we end up with our feet to the fire because of particular projects, and that's okay. But I've never seen the Capital Planning Commission in the last 10 years ever serve as a divisive force or as a force for preventing progress. It does serve as a sounding board to make sure that everybody's brought to the table, not just a narrow range of folks. And that's what would happen here.
Thank you. Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mannix, who would be included under the Capital Planning Commission who has not been involved in the conversations up until this point?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, of course, I have not yet sat at any meetings to discuss this, but I would certainly ask that the County Planning Department be invited in for their comments about the impact of the disposition of this land. I would ask that the city planning department is already represented on the Capital Planning Commission. I would ask for coordination among the agencies. Is DAS talking to parks? See, this isn't just, I heard the comment talking about the agencies disposing of their land. Excuse me, it's the people's land. This is land owned by the state of Oregon, and it's administered by the agencies, and yes, sometimes the legal title is in the name of the agency. But my experience has been agencies tend to look at this from a very narrow perspective, and if it's corrections property, corrections will be looking at it from their perspective. We would say, have you brought in parks? Have you looked at the recreation and parks context? We would talk to the Department of Environmental Quality and say, have you been brought in to talk about mitigation issues? Some of this is wetland. We would bring in the Department of Human Resources and make sure that they've had discussions about the opportunities for housing for people in the community. There are some economic pressures against low-income housing, and I'd want to make sure that our housing department is brought in to discuss those aspects. A holistic approach is what I'm talking about, and not something which requires that we go back out there and reinvent the wheel, but that we coordinate the information from a global perspective.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Would you mind if we brought the mayor back up so I could find out if those people have been involved in this process?
I'll be happy to do that if we can be brief.
Sure. Mayor?
Be very brief, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bowman. I heard the question. If I may, yes, they have been contacted. Both conservation groups, both the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Fish and Wildlife, every discipline and every interest that we could think of has been invited to the table. That's why I consider it to be a model of community planning. And so they have been, in fact, contacted, and they've, in fact, participated. And that's why it concerns me, as in Section 3 of the proposal, lines 25 and 26, on page 2, it talks about the Capital Planning Commission having to approve all proposals or reductions. That's a very mainline function in the proposed process that wasn't there before, and I would simply and respectfully request that it not be interjected at this point in this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, I remind you we are in a work session on House Bill 2743 and considering the dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkinson.
Chair, I'd like to move the dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2743.
Representative Atkinson moves the dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2743. Is there any discussion? All right, seeing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson.
Aye.
Beck.
Aye.
Bowman.
No.
Deckard. Harper.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Sunseri.
Aye.
Thompson. Wilson.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2743 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Atkinson moves that House Bill 2743 be referred to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion? Right, seeing none, clerk.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Bowman?
No.
Deckard? Harper?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Sunseri?
Yes.
Thompson?
Aye. Motion is adopted, and Representative Mannix, if you will carry that. Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2743, and we will open the work session on H.J.R. 2. Representative Mannix.
And don't get the Capital Planning Commission involved in this one.
Now, that would be H.J.R. 52.
All right, Representative Mannix, welcome back. And the subject, of course, H.J.R. 2. And would you tell us where we are going with our latest amendment, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Representative Kevin Mannix from Salem. You have before you H.J.R. 2 with two proposed amendments, the dash 1 amendments and the dash 4 amendments. The dash 1 amendments make the substance of the referral clear, that is, to make it clear that subdivisions in the state may regulate nudity in a public place or public establishment to the extent permitted by the United States Constitution. The dash 4 amendments would set this for election in the next primary election, that is, the year 2000 primary election. I made the joking reference to H.J.R. 52 because that has to do with a broader band of issues, which is sexually oriented businesses, a very broad range of businesses, and it has been sent to the House floor. It empowers communities to use the zoning power to regulate the location of those kinds of businesses. This measure is different in the sense that it is narrow but deeper. It only relates to nudity in a public place or public establishment, but as to that, it allows regulation. And frankly, what it does mean is that communities could make a determination that they would regulate the content of nude dancing performances in terms of the amount of clothing that had to be worn or the conduct of the performers. Oregon is one unique state in that the Free Expression Clause has been interpreted in our Constitution to include a variety of things, much of which we could agree is very good, but in this particular issue, it includes the protection of absolute protection of nude dancing as a form of expression. The United States Constitution, the United States Supreme Court has not recognized that, and I don't want to give you the whole pitch because we've had hearings on this before, but Oregon is unique in terms of this interpretation. This would take a narrow shot at that one piece and allow the regulation by government as to these performances.
Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you.
All right. All right, we're in a work session on HJR 2, and what is the committee's
Well, Mr. Chair, clarification from the administrator. Do we need the dash ones, or will the fours include the ones? Doesn't look like it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Spencer, you need both.
Need both. Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones in HJR 2.
Representative Sanseri moves the dash one amendments into HJR 2. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
I object.
All right, note one objection. Further objection? All right. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanseri.
Move the dash fours in HJR 2.
Representative Sanseri moves the dash four amendments into HJR 2. Is there discussion? Are there objections?
I object.
Noting one objection, and motion carries.
And Mr. Chair, I understand this has to go to Ways and Means.
No, it does not.
No, it does not.
Different one.
Pardon?
Different bill.
So it's HJR 2-4, $51,408.
Oh.
Dash 1 has the same thing for $44,000.
Yep, this is 51. Look at dash 4, isn't it?
That's to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I move HJR 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Sanseri moves HJR 2 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? All right, seeing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Beck? Baldwin?
No.
Deckard? Harper?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Sanseri?
Aye.
Thompson? Wilson?
Aye. And the motion carries. And Representative Mannix, if you will, please thank you. I will close the work session on HJR 2. And we'll stand down for just a moment. House Committee on General Government will now come to order, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2658. And we will call Mr. John Chandler forward, please.
John Chandler.
And welcome back before the committee. And could you talk to us a bit about 2658 and where we're going?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association. Here on House Bill 2658, specifically dash three amendments there too. We heard this bill a month or so ago, quite a bit of discussion. What the bill deals with is the subject of inclusionary zoning, where developers are built and builders are required to build a certain number of houses at a certain price point. The dash three amendments were worked out with Metro, and in fact, the language in front of the dash three was prepared by Metro's general counsel. We agree with the language. And what we're trying to say here is to make it clear that a local government can do inclusionary zoning if it's voluntary, if it's market-driven, if it's incentive-based, contractual, et cetera, so forth. Now, you can see all the language here we've used. Our thought simply is if it doesn't meet this standard, then it's nothing more than punitive for the builder or developer, and that's what the bill does, would prohibit anything other than voluntary measures where it makes sense. But we are absolutely not trying to get in the way of creative housing strategies by making it something that makes sense both for the builder and for the community. For that, we would encourage your adoption of the dash threes. I'm not taking any questions, my friend.
Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
We are on what bill, Mr.
We are on 2658.
This is actually the one good bill that I believe Mr. brought forward this session.
And Mr. Chairman, at the risk of costing myself a vote, actually the next bill is the good bill.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
Yeah, you worked me over for half an hour on a good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the clarification.
All right.
Thanks for the warning.
Is there any discussion? All right. No questions further? All right. We'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkinson.
I would like to move the dash three amendments into House Bill 2658.
Representative Atkinson moves the dash three amendments into House Bill 2658. Is there any discussion? Are there objections?
Mr. Chair, I object.
All right, noting one objection. And motion carries.
Could have been dangerous, John. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkinson.
I'd like to move House Bill 2658 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Atkinson moves House Bill 2658 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Right. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson.
Aye.
Deck.
If I'm voting, I'll be cautious and vote no.
Bowman?
No.
Deckard?
Pass. When in doubt.
Can't pass.
Deckard?
Just say no.
Now?
No. Harper?
Aye.
That's a charge.
Aye.
Sinceri?
Aye.
Thompson? Wilson?
Aye. And the motion carries. And shall we have Representative
Lewis? What's the relating?
We will have Representative Lewis carry that bill. All right, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2658. And we'll now open a work session on House Bill 2474. And Mr. Chandler again, please. Okay, committee will notice that this bill has been loaned to the Civil Judiciary Committee for their review, and they reported it back with a favorable recommendation. The dash threes adopted.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, for the record, John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association, here on House Bill 2474. I realize this is a work session, but since this committee hadn't had a chance to hear the discussion that occurred in civil judiciary, I have prepared some written testimony that for your files to tell you what this bill does. Essentially, we had one of the more interesting panels in civil judiciary that I've ever been on. It was myself, Mr. Honeycutt from Oregonians in Action, the League of Cities, City of Portland, and the Association of Counties, all sitting at the table together saying good things about the bill. That doesn't happen very often. And I would like to state on the record our appreciation to those other entities and local government for their work with us in crafting this bill. The Dash 3 amendments in front of you are a much better product than when the bill started, but it still accomplishes the intentions that we came to the session with. Essentially, very, very briefly, what this bill does, it allows a developer, let me back up a second, when a developer goes in to local government for an approval on a project, a subdivision, what have you, oftentimes conditions are attached to that approval. In other words, you can do this, but you have to do X and Y. Under the current law, if you don't think, if you're the developer and you don't believe that X and Y are legal or appropriate, you have two choices. You can either accept them and grump about it, or you can not accept them and appeal to LUBA, and in which case your project stops. You don't go forward. What 2474 does, it allows the project to go forward and provides that that does not, you accept the condition, doesn't create a waiver. You can still appeal the condition. You can still challenge it. A bill specifically provides that if it's to, you're told by the condition to do something or pay something, you have to either do or pay or post a bond so the local government is kept whole. In other words, they tell you to run a road and you turn out and you don't think they should be able to, and it turns out that you're wrong and they do have the authority, they at least have the road. If you win, if the developer wins, you get paid back. It's a very simple bill in a sense, and it takes away the ability of local government to stop projects, preserves the ability to challenge those conditions that might be illegal. There is one, and I think the copy I handed out to you is a hand engrossed. We noticed when it came back from the Legislative Council, on this way from the dash 1s to the dash 3s, subsection 2 of section 2 got modified substantially. The cross-reference back to that subsection in line 19 and line 24 of page 1 carrying over to the second page didn't get caught in the drafting process. I talked with Ledge Council this morning, and Mr. Crane said if we simply did what I wrote hand in growth there, striking the words subsection 2 of, that takes care of that problem. We believe, as I stated at the outset, Mr. Chairman, this is a very good bill. It's been through a lot of work. We've gotten the support of local governments on it, which we appreciate very much, and we commend the dash of the amendments to you. And Representative Bowman, this is a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Not that I rank my bills, mind.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for Mr. Chandler?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So this does not affect, if development is approved with conditions, and someone else, third party, or an opponent to the development appeals the project, this doesn't affect that. Appeal, the project couldn't go forward if the community, if citizens appealed the development project. The project would go on hold, and would landowner would write grumpy letters, and the development project would sit while the issue is resolved.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, that's correct. There is a process in the LUBA statutes to get us to allow the project to go forward. That
right.
got affected.
This would not affect.
This bill only addresses appeals by the applicant property owner. It doesn't affect other sorts of issues.
So if I can follow up related to this then, if a developer accepts the decision but appeals a condition, goes forward, starts the development, a year later finds the condition was wrong or illegal, and how would the compensation be defined? Is it legal compensation, or is it infrastructure, or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, the way that would work, first, I'm not sure I understand your question, and to point out a couple things in the bill that are very important. First is that the developer can't wait a year. If you were asking, can the developer wait a year and come back and sue? No. The bill still, you have 21 days from approval to go to LUBA. That stays. And the bill specifically provides in subsection 2 of section 2 a shorter time clock for the inverse condemnation actions in circuit court of 180 days, where that would normally be 6 years. So developers, and that was part of the negotiation with local government, that this way the city will be on notice very early on. And the reason we did it this way is that LUBA and circuit court have concurrent jurisdiction. LUBA, without getting too technical, the Land Use Board of Appeals has jurisdiction over land use issues, but the circuit court has jurisdiction over money damages. The LUBA can't award money damages, so part of the claim is for money. You also have to file in circuit court, but under this act, you'd have to do it within 180 days. But to get to the question of how the compensation is structured, It could be any of a number of things. The original version of the bill, or the dash one amendments to it, actually had set out remedies that we decided after talking with the cities weren't necessary because they're already part of the common law. But you could get paid back for the value of the road you put in, let's say, for the, basically the amount of time and effort you expended on that. If it was a fee, you'd get refunded. If it wasn't anything involving a performance of an act, or if the act hadn't been done yet, then the condition would simply be stricken by LUBA. It would depend, the remedy, in other words, Representative Meck, would depend an awful lot on what stage of the project things occurred.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bowman.
I move the dash three amendments that have the conceptual amendments on them that are designated by stars on the page.
Thank you. Representative Bowman moves the hand-engrossed dash three amendments into House Bill 2474. Is there any discussion? All right. Are there any objections? All right. Seeing none, motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
I move House Bill 2474 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bowman moves House Bill 2474 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
I want to compliment Mr. Chandler for actually bringing us a piece of legislation that has true support from all the stakeholders rather than our normal thing, which is we like it, we don't. So my compliments for your hard work on this good piece of legislation, Mr. Chandler.
Thank you.
I'm a no.
Thank you.
I'm a no.
See, that's the...
Okay, quit helping me.
That's the chance you take when I like your bill.
It's never happened before, Representative Bowman, so I was completely unaware.
Representative Bowman, I would like to make a suggestion that cannot claim to be the originator of, but a certain member of this panel has suggested that we might mark this occasion by you carrying the bill.
I would be honored.
Okay,
it would be the only bill I've ever carried by
all right.
Mr. Chandler.
Holy mackerel.
All right, we have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion?
I did. I had a hard vote count.
All right, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Deck.
Aye.
Bowman.
Aye.
Deckard.
Aye.
Harper.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Sunseri.
Aye.
Thompson. Wilson.
Aye. And the motion is adopted, and Representative Bowman, if you'll carry it, please.
And you know it may kill it on the floor.
And we close the work session on 2474, and our final scheduled event for the day will be House Bill 3469. We open a work session on House Bill 3469. And Representative Starr, would you like to take the table, or would you like to talk from up here?
I can talk from here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. Representative Starr has the floor, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I would request that we look at adopting the dash 3 and the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3469. The dash 3 amendments deal with issues that were raised by some of the proponents of the bill. I can find my copy. The deal with, I think, the funding issues that some folks had concerns of in this bill. For the original bill. I think that adopting the dash 3 amendments would take care of that concern. I think it's a good move, and I would urge adoption of the dash 3s. As far as the dash 5 amendments, in our original hearing, Representative Mannix came forward with the dash 2 amendments that were at the request of corrections folks. And I think that the dash 5 amendments address some of those concerns. I understand the concerns of our corrections friends, but I don't think that I would support going to the full extent of the dash 2s, which would be a full exemption of this law for our corrections folks. I think that the dash 5 amendments address those concerns in an adequate way. We worked with Representative Mannix. I ran several drafts by him as we were working on this issue to try to find a more middle ground. And the Dash 5 amendments, we came to us from South Carolina, in fact, as what they've adopted, and it seems to work pretty well in their state. And I ran these past Representative Mannix, and he agreed that he would at least stay neutral or silent on the issue. So I would respectfully request the adoption of the Dash 5 amendments. Further, Mr. Chair of committee members, this has a significant fiscal on the bill. I recognize that. And due to that, I do believe this should go to Ways and Means, where we can continue to work the bill and see if it's of enough interest to the members in this assembly that we can move the bill forward. So I would respectfully request that the S3s and the S5s be adopted into the bill, and we move the bill to Ways and Means.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, question?
Representative Bowman.
Why is there a significant fiscal on this, and we haven't seen it?
Actually, you should have it in your file, Representative Bowman. The Department of Justice believes that they would have significant religious freedom cases that they would have to defend. I don't necessarily agree with it to the extent that they think. I've got a letter to Attorney General Hardy Myers to trying to find out where and how they came up with these numbers. I haven't gotten that letter back yet. I expect to work with the Attorney General and hopefully find some kind of middle ground. Look at the history of the state. We had this test, the compelling interest test, in this state for 30 years until the early 1990s. And during that period, there wasn't a significant problem. We had a period of time when we were under RFRA federally in the state. There were cases then, and I don't see how the extension of this fiscal comes from that small experiment of those 3 years. So we'll continue to work those issues in Ways and Means. I think it's an important enough bill that we move this bill forward. It's important to those folks in this state that do have religious beliefs and are connected in those kinds of issues. So I would ask again that we move this bill forward.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Move the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 3469.
Representative Atkinson moves the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 3469. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
I object.
Noting one objection. That motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkinson.
I'd like to move the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 3469.
Representative Atkinson moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 3469. Discussion? Objections?
I object.
Noting one objection. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkinson.
I'd like to move House Bill 3469 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Atkinson moves that House Bill 3469 be reported to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion? All right. Seeing none, clerk.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Deck?
No.
Bowman?
No.
Deckard?
No.
Parker?
Aye.
Jar?
Aye.
Sensary?
Aye.
Thompson? Wilson?
Aye. Motion is adopted and going to Ways and Means. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3469. I just want to thank the committee for all your hard work. This clears our schedule on House bills, and we will begin entertaining Senate bills on Thursday. So yeah, thanks again for your
great work. We appreciate it very much.
All right.
No
good
further
chairs, staff, sure. This is the way the committee ought to be run.